This episode is brought to you by Ibotta. Finally taking that summer vacation you've been planning but dreading buying all the necessities before you take off. That can be very daunting, especially when you're buying 40 different little items all at different stores, all that seem to be increasingly expensive. It's time to stop spending your hard-earned money without getting anything in return. Enter Ibotta. Ibotta gives you cash back on hundreds of grocery items from produce to personal care to pantry goods so you can make sure you're beating inflation no matter what you're purchasing. Either link your loyalty account or upload your receipt after you shop and get your cash back. It's just that easy. The average Ibotta user earns $120 per year. That could cover the cost of an entire shopping trip. Or you could use your cash back to buy that flight you've been eyeing, that game you're dying to go to, or the fancy dinner you've been craving. Maybe you could even buy tickets to Messi's first game. I'm sure that they won't be super expensive at all. You just go ahead and use those Ibotta savings to make that happen. Other apps give you points that don't amount to much. With Ibotta, you get real cash back that you can cash out to your bank account, PayPal, or gift cards. You can earn cash back on hundreds of online brands and retailers, too, when you start with Ibotta, including Lowe's. For all of you homeowners out there, Macy's, Sephora, Best Buy, and more. Right now, Ibotta is offering our listeners $5 just for trying Ibotta by using the code TSS when you register. Just go to the App Store or Google Play Store and download the free Ibotta app and use code TSS. That's Ibotta in the Google Play or App Store and use code TSS. Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell, and it's Tuesday, which means we've got MLS to discuss. Here with me to do so is the regular Joe Lowry. Hello, Joe.
The regular Joe Lowry. Is there like a special edition Joe Lowry that only comes out Thursday nights? That's when that version of Joe Lowry comes out. Thursday night Lowry. All right. It is just the regular me. Taylor, what's up?
And then there's St. Patrick's Day Lowry, where you dress up in all green and sort of do the whole show as a leprechaun. It feels offensive, but you go for it, so we let Joe Lowry slide.
Taylor, it's body paint. How many times do I have to tell you? It is green body paint. Unbelievable.
But I was pointing out the regular Joe Lowry because I wanted to then have the returning David Goss. Hello, David.
Hola.
I can hear you unmute your mic. That's phenomenal work by you. Goss, if you are applying body paint for a holiday or event, what would it be? I'm going to need a very specific answer, and you've had enough time to think about it while I've stalled. Go ahead.
I'll just do the current holiday, which is I would do Passover, and I would make it the color of matzah.
All right. Is that not already your color?
It's pretty much. So kill two birds with one stone on that one.
All right, I've started us off on very solid footing. Speaking of starting off on solid footing, Joe, let's talk San Diego FC for a moment. That does feel like an appropriate segue based on what I've read. They do not have certain personnel in place, which would normally be more of a concern. Maybe it is for you. No sporting director yet, no head coach. They do have the youth technical director of the academy program. They've brought in a few players so far. How are you feeling about their build at this point so far?
I'm feeling really good about their build. So I spent a lot of time over the last couple of days digging into San Diego, and we should peel back the curtain for a second. The reason why we're doing this is simply because Tom Bogert reported yesterday that Chucky Lozano is, it sounds like, coming to San Diego for a $12 million fee from PSV. A pretty big deal.
Joe,
both
it doesn't count as pulling back the curtain if it's the most public thing about.
No, I pulled it back, Goss. I pulled the curtain. The curtain's been pulled. It's been pulled
back. Here's the secret. The only story about this team is why we're talking
about. To be fair, I will moderate this one and say, Joe is really just doing the work that I should have done in introducing this by saying, we're talking about San Diego because they may sign Chucky Lozano. That's the rumor. That's the report. Let's talk more about them. So, Joe, thank you for covering me. And Goss, your cynicism is appreciated.
Yeah, Goss did you dirty. Let's just be honest. Goss did you dirty. Anyway, it sounds like they're going to sign Chucky Lozano, which is, I think, very exciting. We'll talk more about that later. But that sort of prompted all of us to think, what's up with San Diego these days? We know they've got the manhole cover crest. Like, we remember that. We remember their name being completely uninspiring. What else is going on with them? So I'll run through a few of the things, of the top line things that are happening right now with San Diego. They're going to debut next year. They're going to be at Snapdragon Stadium, which is where, which is San Diego State University Stadium. It's where the Wave play in the NWSL. The really interesting thing outside of the first team roster with San Diego is their connections to the Right to Dream Academy. Now, what's the Right to Dream Academy? Well, it's this big cross-border academy. It's got a residential academy model. So you're living there, you're going to school, you're playing soccer for the club's academy to either go and play pro or to play college soccer in the U.S., or they're going to pay for these players in San Diego to just straight up go to college, even if they don't want to play soccer, if they're not good enough. This is a pretty cool model that we don't really see a lot in the United States. RSL is the only other residential academy. Shout out to Travis Clark for hooking me up with that piece of info. They're the only other residential academy, and they do grades 9 to 12. San Diego are doing 6 to 12. They just broke ground at this new facility that they're building for the club and for the academy that is less than 50 kilometers away from the U.S.-Mexico border. Why, you ask, is it less than 50 kilometers away from the U.S.-Mexico border? Well, because, according to FIFA rules, you can recruit within neighboring countries if you're within 50 kilometers. And that's exactly what San Diego want to do. They want to have access to talent in Mexico. They want to have access to talent in San Diego. And because of their connections in Ghana and Egypt and Denmark through Right to Dream, they're going to be able to grab talent from other parts of the world as well. So there's a lot happening with San Diego right now. And I am more bullish on them after doing some of this research than I sort of thought I would be.
Goss, broadly speaking, would you agree with that sentiment, or are you a little more pessimistic?
I'm probably a little more pessimistic because Joe Scarf just fell off the wall and he's wearing both jerseys. He could double jersey. Normally you don't see a double kit full lengths, but that's where Joe's at right now. But I understand the excitement for Joe, which is, one, the market just makes sense. Like, the ability to connect into Mexico and Tijuana makes sense, but Cholos has been recruiting players from San Diego and America for years. It is one of the largest soccer markets. I just got back from the GA Cup. Half the players on half the teams are from the San Diego area. Like, it is one of the quote-unquote open territories that everyone's trying to get into. And Right to Dream seems like the right project to be able to hit the ground quickly of, like, we have this base of 20 years now of youth development at an elite level. We are committed to it. The things Joe talked about, the way the school is going to work, the way it's all operates, they've shown in their history, like, they will do the right thing for players, and it makes it really easy to recruit. All of that, I think, is super exciting, on top of the fact that, like, San Diego Wave have proven there's soccer market there, and there are fans there. San Diego Loyal would say the same as well. So it seems like a lot of, like, can't miss stuff. I think there's some question marks. I understand they have an overarching soccer philosophy, but when you look at the successful expansion teams over the last 5 years, they got general managers and coaches in place early to start to build a DNA and start to build an idea. Now, my thought is this team will bring a group of players from Norgeland. They'll bring a group of young players over from the Right to Dream Academy, specifically in Ghana. And those players will have some connection, so you don't have to build it all on the fly, which Bob Bradley had to do, but he was able to do it because he picked players he had worked with before that fit his style. So I think we're starting to get into a little bit more dangerous territory, but I understand the excitement and I understand the appeal. And the thing that is most exciting to me is that they are going to be different. And I like when MLS teams choose different ways to build and create their styles.
Yeah, it does seem on the sporting director or CSO or coach, all that stuff, it does seem like San Diego are nearing one of those hires. The Athletic has reported that they're in advanced talks with Monaco technical director Carlos Avina. He's a Mexican, 33 years old, was at Club America, then in Belgium, and has been at Monaco since the start of this season as their sporting director, as their technical director, excuse me. So it does seem like that hire is coming sooner rather than later. And I do think it's time for San Diego to get themselves in gear on a coaching hire on some of these things. Obviously, it makes sense to get the CSO in place first before you do the coach. That is, like, smart soccer, sports, life, business planning 101. So I think that's a good sign. And guys, you got to this point about them snagging players from Norgeland, which, again, is a Right to Dream club. They're owned by the same man and the same group that owns now San Diego, or at least a chunk of San Diego. They already have two signings from Norgeland on their roster. One's a striker, one's a central midfielder. And they've also signed Duran Ferry, who's a 17-year-old U.S. youth national team goalkeeper. Was with the San Diego Loyal last year. He's not, I would expect, going to be the starting goalkeeper, but you can even see there their commitment to youth and wanting to really have that be a big part of what they're doing. To me, you toss in the youth connections that they're going to have, the fact that they are going harder down the academy route than literally any club in Major League Soccer, being in a talent-rich area, and the fact that they are in the fact that they're showing a clear intention to spend, even if I think everybody can probably agree $12 million for Chucky Lozano is a bit on the steep side, like, they're sort of falling into the ideal category of expansion team, which in my head, there's sort of three. There's the, we're going to spend from the jump and try to compete. And that's in my head over the last few years, Atlanta and LAFC. There's the, we're going to have an identity that lets us not break the bank, which is sort of where I thought San Diego might be as it relates to first team spending until the Lozano news came out. That's maybe Nashville and St. Louis. And then there's the, we have no clue what we're doing, Minnesota United FC, Cincinnati, Charlotte FC tier. There's probably a few more that belong in that tier. It certainly doesn't seem like San Diego's in that one. So much work left to do for sure. But man, as far as early building blocks go, if they can get the CSO hire and the coaching hire involved sooner rather than later, I don't know that you can do like a whole lot better than this.
I don't disagree, Joe, I think with like where you're at right now. I would warn just that there's a chance that Chucky Lozano signing is a Wayne Rooney signing, which is like, it's the one big publicity signing up front.
Yeah.
And obviously DC wasn't an expansion team, but you get my point.
Yeah.
And it's like, the idea, I mean, we could just say Ache in Houston. I think the idea and the reason Chucky Lozano is an inflated fee is because of his publicity ability in that market and all Mexican international players' ability in Major League Soccer. So you're normally paying that inflated rate that it then prints the money back in jerseys, in ticket sales, in buzz. And so we don't know yet that there's two more coming. Like, this could be the one they do.
For sure.
And then everything else fits in a different model, like a Nashville or whatever, as they went along.
Joe, can you run me through those three tiers one more time, please?
Yeah, and there's probably a bit more nuance that folks could have here. But the three that I generally think about is, we're going to spend and, like, really try to compete from day one. And I loop Atlanta and LAFC. There have been others, sure, but those are the two that come to mind for me. Then there's the, we're going to have an identity that lets us kind of try to become more than the sum of our parts. And St. Louis modeled that to near perfection last year with just two DPs. They were towards the bottom of the league in roster spend. Nashville coming into the league in 2020 was a big contrast from Miami, who are sort of like a cross between the first category and the third one, which is, we don't know what we're doing. And that's Cincinnati bringing, you know, too many USL players and just not having good decision makers. It's Minnesota being absolutely abysmal when they come into the league in 2017. It's Charlotte still having Zoran Krneta make a lot of those decisions, although it feels like things are getting a bit better there. Like, those are the things, those are the categories that I think of as far as expansion teams go. And Goss, to your point, it is a good point. Like, I want to be clear, it's too early. We don't know for sure what this team's going to look like. They're not going to have the academy set up all the way up and running. They're going to be growing pains for this club. But man, I look at some of the resources that they have if, and it is a big if, to your point, David, if they continue to spend and if they say, hey, we want to go out there and compete. We want to be in that first category of expansion teams. Like, I think they have the foundation to support those top players at a level that we haven't seen a whole lot. We've seen it before, but we haven't seen a whole lot in terms of expansion over the last, you know, basically decade now.
Joe, is there a higher, an approach that would make you feel like, okay, they are a team that's going to compete? Is it signing more designated players? Is it having a headline-grabbing manager? Is it just having a manager that fits a philosophy? Like, what would you like to see from them as they build towards 2025?
Yeah, in an ideal world, certainly go out and spend on the top and the middle and the bottom of the roster as much as you can. Take advantage of, you know, whatever the increases that are going to come in the summer. Don't make all of your roster moves now. Like, go out and figure out what's coming as the winds blow some change into Major League Soccer. And one thing that's been reported, and they're not getting it in Carlos Savinha, as their, it seems like, likely chief soccer officer. One thing that's been reported, though, that they're looking for is, like, front office voices that have MLS experience. And again, I say this with players all the time. It's not just, oh, let's go out and get a guy who's been involved in Major League Soccer. That's not enough. It's not enough on the player side. You go out and talk about teams having success by signing players who know MLS. It's not just that they know MLS. They have to know MLS and be good at soccer. And the same thing applies on the front office side. It's not enough just to, like, have been existing in the MLS ecosystem. You got to, like, know the league. You got to understand the intricacies of how you can go out there and exploit the roster rules, turn them to your advantage, use the knowledge that you have as a marginal gain. Those people exist in MLS, and we've seen clubs have real success hiring those people. Since he's a great one, going out and getting Chris Albright, who then adds a ton of talent and transforms the squad in a matter of a couple of seasons. Go get someone like that. If you're not going to do it as your number one in the front office, which would probably be my preference, go out and get someone who you really believe in as a number two who can help do those things. And maybe that's a coach. You know, maybe that's a number two in the front office, and maybe that's a coach too. Man, go out and find a few people to supplement all of the knowledge you're bringing into this area that have, like, actual understanding and ability to use the knowledge that comes from Major League Soccer to the club's advantage.
Yeah, I think the head coach is where I'm looking at that, Joe, which I agree with you of, like, you need that, but also you don't do it for name only. Like, you have to get quality in the building. I think one of, so my big worry about this team, which I said, I like when teams try different things, but it means it's going to be an unknown. If this team throws 3 18-year-olds from Ghana on the field in their starting lineup in the opening game, that will be unprecedented. It could work. I believe in talent. I believe in, like, empowering young players to have the opportunity, but you have to have the support system around them. And so I think what's going to be interesting to me is, like, where they build that spine, what type of veterans, what correct veterans can they bring in to be a part of this group if that's the angle they choose to lean on straight out the gate, which is what we've kind of heard as they've gone along. And you'd like to see a coach that fits into that idea. I don't know if it's a Jesse Marsh. I don't know if he's interested in anything like that. I don't know if he fits their playing style at all. I don't know if it's a Robin Fraser, if that's the type of direction you go in, or if you want to show that you're that number one pot that Joe talked about in expansion, go get someone who you think is good, who has a job. Like, this is one of the things that Columbus did that's unique, and I'm hoping to see more of, which is like, yeah, we'll give you assets for your coach.
Right. Wait.
We want your coach.
Yeah. Agreed on that. Like, I'm all for that trend in Major League Soccer. I'm just trying to figure out who that coach is, right? If we all agree that San Diego would benefit from someone who understands MLS and can leverage that knowledge into something, like, I don't really know who that manager is, which is a tricky thing. Like, to the point where I would be a little surprised if San Diego go out there and try to snag someone from an existing club. Other than Wilfred Nancé, you're thinking about the possession-oriented managers, because that is how I think San Diego will want to play. Nordjylland dominate the ball. They have like 57% possession in the Danish top flight right now. I don't think San Diego will go out there and try to have 57% of the ball, but I do expect that they're going to try to use possession. And I don't really know who the manager is, because you think about a guy like Jim Curtin, I don't know that anybody can pry him out of Philadelphia right now, or it probably would have happened already. But he's not, at this point, a possession-oriented manager, even if he once was. It's a tricky thing. Like, it is a tricky thing. I don't know who that hire is going to be. But, man, they've got some big decisions to make, even with, I think, a strong foundation that's in the process of being laid.
Yeah, I don't... besides Nancé, there's not an obvious name. Greg Vanney would be on there as well, but... you might just be able to get him because he might get fired if his year doesn't go well going forward. And that would be, I mentioned Robin Fraser. I think Robin Fraser, what happened in Colorado was he was like, I'm going to play as Barcelona. And like, I don't care if our players aren't good enough and we're not ready to do it.
Which speaks really well of his ability as a coach,
yeah,
by the way.
The obvious names that would then get pulled in are like the Domi Torrents, the Patrick Vieiras of the world, yeah, right? People who have been in those systems, who have been in this league in the past. I believe one of the names that's been connected is Jimmy Traore, because he works in the Nordjylland setup and obviously played in Major League Soccer. But this is similar to CFG. This is a group that has deep ties across the world. I'm sure it's going to be a name we don't name, because it's going to be someone we don't know. But I do think they have to just have that secure base of like, who are the veterans you build this roster through that can help young players and young pieces. The other thing about San Diego that they came out the gate really loud on, and I think they've kind of toned down, especially when Joe mentioned where they're building the training facility and how they're setting it up. They were like, we're going to do the Right to Dream model, which is like, we're going to do a soccer camp everywhere. And we're going to find every player in Jackson, Mississippi, and, you know, Northern Illinois, and out in Maine, and like all that stuff. And it's like, don't. You don't need to. Like, you're in Southern California, San Diego, and on the border of Mexico in a massive city like Tijuana. It feels like they've moved a little bit back from that and been like, okay, actually, if we perfect our region, we can be this giant that we want to be. And I think that's the right move.
How would you all feel? I'm not saying this is likely or even possible, but how would you all feel if it was Juan Carlos Osorio?
I love Juan Carlos Osorio as a person. I think as a manager, he's a bit of a showman, and there's not a lot of substance behind it. Like, he would have been one where it's like president or technical director as like the face of it, you know, move. But like, his entire career is just movement, which is like, can he get a job to then move to the next job? And he's never really stayed anywhere and one thing. So I don't think that one would be on the top of my list.
Taylor, like, are you still stuck in our Chicago Fire Big Thing episode, or where's JCO coming from?
That, and I feel like he was kind of unappreciated as the Eltree manager. I thought he was, I just said the Eltree. Ugh, that's upsetting. But I thought he was, I thought he was better than I think he got credit for. I think he was another victim of their press just going after managers when things don't go well. I don't think we've seen Mexico look particularly stronger since he was gone, but he has connections to Mexico. He has connections to Major League Soccer in the U.S. You are correct, Joe. It's been a while. I think like 2009 was when he left the Red Bulls. So maybe that is too long. But that was one that jumped out because I feel like the answer to this for a very long time is going to be Tata Martino. He just is already employed, and you're not getting him away from Miami.
Yeah, Domi Torrent or Ronnie Dyla. I'm putting my flag on the ground. Goss, you said Domi Torrent. I'll say Ronnie Dyla, who's out of a job right now.
Patrick Vieira.
I would add in, I do think like Liga MX and MLS are more connected now because of Leagues Cup and Campeones Cup and all these 80 things. So I think like a Diego Coca is in that conversation. I think an Antonio Mohamed is in that conversation. Some of these coaches where I think Hugo Sanchez got connected one time in the public. Yeah. Like those are big names that are coming from Mexico that I do think have a level of sincerity in the way they try and understand and look at Major League Soccer versus some external managers who are like, oh yeah, it's not that hard. Like if he can do it on Derby County, he can do it here. And you're like, for sure.
Get him.
So, JCO, oh, I would say JCO is around. Like I think he's lived in the U.S. a ton of time, even when he's not.
He's around. That's what you want in a coach, baby. Yeah, he's around.
So there you go.
Disrespecting Atletico Paranense. How dare you? I think that's where he is currently managing. Nope, they parted ways with him. He's around. You're correct. Never mind. All right. Goss, what about this? If you had to choose between Bruce Arena and Jurgen Klinsmann to lead this program, who would it be?
Wow. This is a real Sophie's choice.
Joe, don't worry because you're going to get an even worse question.
Oh, good.
Oh, I have to actually answer it?
Yes.
I don't want to answer that question. I'll take Caleb Porter.
Oh, yeah, baby.
All right. Joe, Caleb Porter or Didier Deschamps?
Didier Deschamps for the energy, for the vibes.
There we go.
Yeah. Absolutely. For the fits on the sideline. Absolutely.
Loves Didier Deschamps. Just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Yep. Did Jurgen get fired yet?
Jesse Marsh was linked with
very
the
much
South
so. Jurgen Klinsmann is very much okay. fired. Yeah. 100%.
Yep. Any other points to make about San Diego? Do we feel like we've talked enough about Chucky Lozano, or is that just a wait and see what happens and then see how the roster fills out from there?
Yeah, Joe, you start.
Yeah, I'll hop in. I tweeted this yesterday. I think he's going to be a really good signing. $12 million is a lot and certainly inflated for some fairly obvious reasons as it relates to the market and where San Diego are as a club right now. He is, though, going to be, I think, one of the absolute best wingers in MLS, like right from the jump, which makes sense. All the good wingers in MLS have to be in California. I don't know who made that rule, but that rule apparently exists. And so I certainly think we're going to see Chucky Lozano get in that category. He's not like breaking the Champions League anymore. He's not even really breaking PSV anymore because the load is spread out so evenly across the field for PSV as they dominate everybody in the Netherlands. But if you go and watch the tape, either in the league or in the Champions League, and he's not like, oh my goodness, this guy is electric. If he was, he'd not be coming to San Diego. But he is very much at those levels right now. And I think the level of defending in MLS is probably not that much higher than the level of defending in the Eredivisie. He can do things with his right foot that very, very few players in MLS can. He is going to be productive for San Diego, like really productive.
Gus?
I'm okay with it as a starting point, and I understand the economics behind it and like the ideas behind it. I look at the signing and say, I think he's a worse soccer player than Carlos Vela was when he came here because I think he's not at the level talent-wise.
Let's go ahead and set the bar
Vela
in the ceiling, Gus. I think, yeah.
100%. And on the same Napoli teams, he played less than Lorenzo Insigne. So if we're trying to put like some scales on this, those are two really good players. Insigne hasn't had unbelievable success. It's not that easy. I would add in, it's not that easy for wingers to affect the game completely. And if that's where you put all your money, now there's a ton of responsibility on his shoulders. He is not a guy who has ever led a team in any capacity. He's been at his best when he's a piece, where all of these moments Joe talks about are happening in 1v1 isolation because most of your defending focus is on other players, including at PSV, where he, I think, is less influential than I expected. And that's kind of now where I'm seeing his career level out of. He came out of Mexico and the idea was like, he's the next Vela. He's going to do things that are different. The hope was he would combine like a Vela and an Ache of like sustainability and consistency with pure talent. I don't think he ever became that guy. And you can go to the US-Mexico games of like, he's the best player, but they don't win those games. And he normally does not score or create a goal, but he is super talented. I agree with Joe and like, he'll be one of the best wingers in the league, but you can isolate a player like that, or you can at least stem some of their damage. I think even when you look at Bouanga and like how good he has been, LAFC don't dominate games. They can't because of the way he plays the game. And it's different than Chucky, but it's not that different in that Chucky's drawing in attention and spraying the ball and opening up players. So I think he'll work. I think he will be good. I don't think we're talking about a player like Acuña, who you can build the whole team around and is dominant. But if he's one of three good DPs, then there's a lot of potential in there.
The Chucky nickname comes from the Chucky doll character film franchise. So if they do a Chucky doll inspired Chucky Lozano bobblehead, then I think we'll know that they're moving in the right direction. And if they don't, missed opportunity, and I have concerns about the franchise. So we'll just have to wait and see if that comes to fruition. For now, on
I think
that
that's
note,
a Peacock property and not an Apple property, oh, so you're probably going to strike out on that one.
Oh,
come on, Taylor. Get your head in the game.
Our modern existence is troubling. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and talk about some actual MLS games back soon. Hey, folks. This is Taylor from the Total Soccer Show, reminding you that we are inching ever closer to the start of the summer transfer window, which means there are teams that will buy and sell their players early, there are teams that will leave that business very late, and there are teams that will operate in between. But no matter what, it's going to be a chaotic situation. There's going to be offers coming through willy-nilly. There's going to be transactions to be tracked and processed and make sure that enough money is there. There's going to be probably angry clubs calling to complain. There are many things to deal with. And unfortunately for those clubs, there is no sort of business tool that makes things easier, makes transactions simpler, gets the business done efficiently and effectively. But for the small businesses around the globe, there is such a service, Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek kits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And I really appreciate that about Shopify. No matter how big you are, no matter how fast you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify's the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. That's as many countries as we'll be selling players in the transfer window this summer. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TSS, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/TSS.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. Joe, David Goss may still be muted, who knows for sure. So I will throw to you to allow you to tell us which game we should talk about first. What's the one that led the way for you this weekend?
Oh, wow. Taylor, I have so much power right now. Mm-hmm. It's literally coursing through my veins.
Oh,
we can start with the first game of the slate. Austin
taking
on the LA Galaxy.
Real power corrupts absolutely vibes from Joe Lowry just then. But go ahead.
You know, it just feels good. Let's talk about Austin. They've won a bunch of games recently. The Galaxy dropping points on the road at Q2 Stadium. Austin sort of taking the Galaxy to task, which is not new in the year 2024 or like the last 10 years of our existence. But man, a fun opening to this game from Austin, and tested the Galaxy, I think, in some really fascinating ways. Goss, did you catch this game? And if so, what did you make of, maybe we'll start with Austin.
So I thought Austin was really good. I think for Austin, you kind of have the moment where it's like Rubio gets an early goal. The game just becomes so much easier for them, right? This is a team that has consistently played the same way. When they finish, it's great. And when they don't, they get frustrated and the game becomes really hard. Getting Rubio this year, I think the style of finisher he is, if healthy, is really big for them. But what I saw in this game is the Galaxy, the way they defend is dominate possession and Austin dominate possession. And so for the Galaxy, the game states weren't set the way they are at their best. And so you saw the discomfort and you saw some of the panic, even on the first goal. It's not like a primary transition moment. It's a mistake from the Galaxy, but they've recovered. But then no one steps. No one's aggressive. No one tries to win the ball. There's confusion. And I think you saw two situations in that first half where the limitations of their center backs shown.
Joe, last week we talked about the limitations of those center backs in that defense. You said you don't expect there to be much more business. Are you feeling way better about the Galaxy after this 2-0 loss? No? No.
I mean, I think I said that if there's going to be a lot of business in the summer, It's going to be for a center back, which is still just so clearly the need for this team. So I do expect them to do something come the summer. But one positive step for the Galaxy is Jalen Neal got the second half of this game. Young U.S. Youth International, very good chance he's going to be at the Olympics this summer and finally made his debut in 2024. Didn't change the game. The Galaxy struggled to mount much in the second half. But that's a good sign. And I would expect that he and Maya Yoshida will be the starting pairing moving forward. Neal is like under 30, which is sort of a rarity for the Galaxy in the back line right now. This is the kind of performance that we're going to see. The Galaxy are going to win more games than they lose in 2024. They already have. They're going to continue to do so. But all of a sudden, you turn the ball over, and Goss talked about how the Galaxy like to defend with possession. That's absolutely true. You turn the ball over and Mark Delgado is out of position, which is intentional for the Galaxy because he does some of the roaming to accommodate Ricky Pooj sitting a little bit deeper. You lose the ball and Delgado's out of position, and all of a sudden you're really, really struggling for a defensive structure. And then on the second goal, you just struggle for pace against Hadar Obreon. Not a lot of center backs in MLS are going to win that battle. Some will. The Galaxy certainly won't. And they really, really struggled. We've seen this show before. We're going to see it again in 2024. The bet that the Galaxy are making is that their attack is strong enough that it just doesn't matter, that they can continue to win games until they have the flexibility and the transfer window to go out there and find that last piece or two along the back line or in goal or whatever it is. Like, they're banking on the fact that their attack is straight up good enough. And one under-discussed part of this game, I didn't get a chance to include it in the backfield write-up. When Austin go up 2-0 inside of 19 minutes, Goss, you talked about how they want to dominate the ball, and that's true in most cases. At that point, you don't need to anymore. And the smart thing is to not to against the Galaxy because of how dangerous they are on the break. Anytime you give Joe Pantsil space, he's going to make you pay or he's going to get darn close. So Austin set up shop. They dropped back and did more of a 4-4-2 block. And the Galaxy this year, as a lot of teams do, but they certainly have struggled against low blocks. We saw this against LAFC when they lose that game 2-1 after the Denny Bouanga sort of chaos, and all of a sudden that puts LAFC up 2-1 with about 5 minutes left in the half. We saw it against Nashville on the road earlier this year where the Galaxy go down 2-0 and they come back and eventually they fight for a point. They couldn't fight for a point here. They continue to struggle to manufacture chances when they have to go up against a compact defense. That's a real story for this team because as the Galaxy have to push higher, as opposing teams wisely drop their lines, all of a sudden that means their center backs are defending in even more space than they would be otherwise. So it's a risky proposition for the Galaxy. And I think their next evolution between now and the summer transfer window, if they're going to go out and grab a center back, which I think they absolutely should, like if they're going to go out there and make a roster change, the thing to work on before then, while you can't control really who you have playing center back, is how dangerous you are on the ball and drilling some of those patterns into the final third. I thought the patterns were actually okay. The Galaxy getting the ball in those Man City zones, the outer corridors in this game against Austin, but the final ball and the timing of the runs in the box, maybe that's a Dejan Jovalic absence issue. Miguel Barry started up top. All those things, like that's, if I'm Greg Vanney, that's the stuff I'm thinking about because the defense can only get so much better with this group of players.
I think that's right, Joe. And in watching this game, one of the thought processes I had was like, because of their defensive issues, the attack has to be perfect. And perfect doesn't mean they finish every chance, and perfect doesn't mean they never turn the ball over. But like the step back from Jovalic to Miguel Barry may have been the difference between this being a Nashville game that they tied 2-2, and that was against a weakened Nashville group going into Champions, whatever, but fine. And this game being 2-0, of like Barry's touches a little bit longer. I think some of his decisions took a little bit longer. And so like just that half loss meant like they're going to give up those two goals. That's just the reality of who the LA Galaxy are. The expectation is they score two or whatever. I'd be interested in these moments and maybe it's different matchups of like Fagundes comes in and they play like all three of the wingers. And they're just like, isn't a center forward. Like if Miguel Barry's that option right now.
Yeah. And we saw that in the second half where Fagundes comes on and Pantsil goes to the nine. Like we're seeing some of those rotations for the Galaxy. There's still a lot of work for them to do. The talent's so obvious. And we'll sort of see how that dynamic continues to progress, I guess.
What about for Austin, Joe? A team that started off, what, 0 wins, 3 draws, 2 losses. They've won 4 of their last 5. How are you feeling about what they've put together lately?
I'm feeling better than I thought I would at this point in the season. I don't think they are 4 wins of their last 5 good. I think they are probably better than how they started the season, which ends up with them probably fighting for one of the last few playoff spots over in the Western Conference with a number of other teams. The thing that's most encouraging about Austin right now is that the pieces actually sort of seem to fit together in a way that makes sense. Sebastian Driussi is still more of a crasher than he is a creator, although he has been creating a bit more this season. So go out there and find a number 9 who can help link play. And Diego Rubio is that, and we see it on the first goal that he eventually goes out and scores. Hunter O'Brien was always sort of an undervalued piece in Dallas. Danny Pereira is still a good piece at the base of midfield. So there are things to like about this team. There's still a ton more work to be done, and I think Austin FC fans would readily acknowledge that. But getting some points on the board now, expecting that you're going to have to take your lumps a bit later in the season because the West is really, really crowded, like, things are looking up for Austin relative to where I think a lot of folks outside of the city of Austin thought they would be in 2024.
I just would throw in the, like, I think it's been a good start for Austin. I think, like, Hunter O'Brien and Brendan Heinzeich and some of these guys, it's just like they're alive human beings versus they've basically been playing carcasses at some of these positions over the last 18 months. So I wouldn't want us to overstate what's happening some of these. Agreed. But to Joe's point, O'Brien's a runner. So like if he can't finish, if he can't do anything, he's going to stretch the field. He's going to give a different look for Driussi to play off of. I do really, and it's what I said when they made the signing, I love the Rubio-Driussi combination because Rubio is a creator if he wants to be. He can drop in. He can change what he does. And Danny Pereira can step higher up the field and he can create a little bit. And so I do like some of the ideas they have there. And Heinzeich just gives someone who can move next to another center back, which has been something that Austin has been lacking for pretty much forever.
I suspect most people listening to this MLS-centric episode are already watching a good amount of MLS. But for both of you, for people who are not, who are the teams that you find to just be the most enjoyable to watch? Like Inter Miami, I would assume would be on that list, so we can skip them. Joe, I'm assuming the Galaxy would be on yours. Who are some other teams, Joe, that you find yourself just enjoying watching, wanting to watch?
I won't take all of them, but I'll toss out the next obvious one, and then, Goss, you can go Columbus. Very much still on the top of that list. They are vying for a spot in the CCC final. They've got Monterrey tomorrow evening as we're recording on Tuesday, up 2-1 on aggregate so far. Columbus, even though they're on this crazy draw streak in MLS, still play, I think, the best and most aesthetically pleasing soccer in the league.
Goss, for you?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think Montreal's entering that territory once again because of the way they play. But I lean into my cliche all the time, which is like, I'll always watch Vancouver because it's always played at 110 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Everything they do past the full extent. And so their games get pretty vertical and there's a lot of energy on their turf. The game is fast, whether it's like clean is another question, but they're just always entertaining. In a way that's different than some of the high-pressing teams that, yeah, Red Bulls go in at 110 miles per hour, but they're doing it into a car crash. So they're one of the ones that's always on that list for me, and I think they still have been this year.
Yeah, Vancouver, I would put in that general category as well, probably down just like one tier from the ones that we already mentioned. But like, they are so much fun, this Vancouver team. They're weird in that they don't really press. Like, they are very, very close to the bottom of MLS in passes allowed per defensive action, like in that they allow a lot of them rather than few of them. So that's an interesting wrinkle from them. But they also don't defend like any other team defends in MLS. So they're not inclined to press. They are like a straight up mid block team. They don't drop into a low block all that often. They defend in a 3-4-3 shape, not in a 5-4-1, not in a 5-2-3. They defend in a 3-4-3. They almost never drop their wing backs to be even with the center backs. And what does that do? Well, that leaves very deliberate spaces behind the wing backs in that 3-4-3 and outside of the center backs. They like set those. It's not even a pressing trap, right? Because they're not pressing. They set these defensive traps in those spaces and they bait teams. They say, hey, come and attack this space, and then we're going to collapse on you out wide. We're going to bait you into crosses. We're going to bait you into low percentage areas. They want to stack numbers in the middle. It's a fascinating thing. There's not a single other team in MLS that does this, that is doing what Vanni Sartini does in that 3-4-3 mid block. Like, it is like clockwork for this team at this point. That's been one of their consistent elements this year. We saw them use it in their 1-1 draw with the Red Bulls, which is a very, very good point on the road for Vancouver. The second team in each conference matching up on Saturday, at least heading into the weekend, they were the second team in each conference. Now they're both down to third in the East and the West. But it's not just the defensive stuff that I think is so fun about Vancouver right now. It's also what they do in possession. So they play nominally out of this 3-4-3 shape. They're playing Sam Adekugbe as a winger, even though he is really a wingback. But he sort of becomes a wingback in possession because their 3-4-3 shifts from being a flat shape to being a three-diamond three. So Ryan Gauld moves from the front line to the number 10 spot. You have one wingback, or one winger stay high and wide, one wingback stay high and wide. The other wingback, which has almost always been a central midfielder masquerading as a wingback, then pinches inside. Pedro Vite steps forward. All of a sudden, you've got Ryan Gauld at the tip of the diamond, Andres Kubas at the other tip, and you've got Vite, and it's often been Ali Ahmed or Alessandro Schaff as the other shuttler, and all of a sudden you've got a diamond. And it is fascinating to watch, and against the Red Bulls, that rotation helped Vancouver overload the double pivot for the Red Bulls, and it got Ryan Gauld on the ball. They quickly switch it over to the right side, which is really the benefactor of the overload in that instance, because then you have free numbers on the other side, and you go over, and you play through Ryan Raposo and a nice cross into Brian White, and it's 1-0 for Vancouver. The Caps are doing like tactical stuff that nobody else is doing in MLS right now, and there are very few things that get me as excited about soccer as that kind of stuff.
Very nice. All right, let's take one more break, and then we will conclude this episode with a few more teams to be discussed. Back soon.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome back to the Total Soccer Show. Joe, I was asking about teams that are fun to watch. Where would RSL be on that ranking? They are top of the West, but not mentioned in either of your shorthand lists.
Yeah, if we'd gone another team or two, they were probably going to be in that category for me. They, as you said, beat Philly over the weekend. They still have, and the reason why they're not all the way on the pure watchability side, although I think they are very, very good right now, the reason why they're not all that high on the watchability side, at least compared to those three or four teams we did talk about, is that they still have an ugly game in them every once in a while. And the Galaxy have an ugly game, but it's going to be like a train wreck that involves at least two goals going on. RSL have that ugliness, and it sometimes still looks like, hey, we're perfectly happy to go out there and muck up a game. They are, though, more possession-oriented and a bit more detailed in their approach this year than they were last year. We're seeing the 3-2-5 from them in possession and everybody else and their mom across the world right now. Like that's something that RSL have adopted with their big assistant coaching shift over the offseason. They're in this 3-2-5. They'll play a young American or young Mexican-American in the case of Fidel Barajas. Basically, every single game, it's been Luna or Barajas in the lineup in all games but one so far for RSL in 2024. They're committed to playing young players. They identify that talent better than most teams in MLS. And they have in Chicho Arango a very, very good goal scorer, and in Matty Crooks, just David Goss's favorite player of all time.
I felt it coming, but I wasn't sure how I was going to get hit. But I knew I was exposed. it is absolutely true. For RSL, I would just say the one thing this year that has stood up for them is this. I think this has been the best year Justin Glad's had in 3 or 4 years, and for them, it's been a huge weakness at center back. They've had elite players at defensive mid at times. Ruiz helps them in a different way, kind of control that space, not available again. And so I think you watch this Philly game and like, this is another game where Glad held up in a lot of big 1v1 situations, which allows them to rotate Vera out a little bit wider in possession, because when they lose it right now, Glad is winning those battles. He has gone up and down. His consistency has been sort of the question mark. They haven't really partnered him with great center backs in the past, and so it's often fallen on his shoulders. But you look at some of the top teams, like the way RSL's built over the last 5 or 6 years, and you talk about St. Louis and Tim Parker last year, and what we've seen from Cincinnati since Miazga's come in, and all these different teams of like, if you can have a center back playing at that level, it can make a lot of things easier for some of your other players, or gives you more options. And I thought this was a really good night this weekend for Glad to go to Philadelphia to battle against Carranza in some big transition moments, to hold up, to keep the team together, and go and win in a place that Philly lost one home game all of last year. And this was pretty much their best group. So to go and emotionally be able to stick with that and then find your way through that game and get the win is massive.
Gus, what else stuck out to you from this weekend?
Ooh, I get to choose one? I get power now?
You do. For now. We'll see how you use it. Yeah.
Well, the thing is power completely corrupts, but I will go with my mate, Johnny Herdman, and the lads up in Toronto.
I hate this already.
This was a game, specifically this game in Orlando. You give up an early goal. You're on the road. You've got some injuries, so you're already a shorter group. That I thought this was one of the thinnest rosters in Major League Soccer. To stay in that game, to hang tight, to be able to keep your lines clean, and then have difference makers come off the bench, or at least in Bernadeschi and Prince, be able to stay in the game and give you that opportunity. I just think this is a massive win for Toronto. They're stealing points right now as they go towards the summer transfer window, which is like, if they could stay in a top five convo, they probably get a bank account to be able to open things up and maybe improve or be able to get Insigne and be able to roll things along. If not, if they're in 10th or 12th, it sort of becomes like, oh, MLSE forgot they exist, and look at how good the Argonauts and the Maple Leafs are and all of those types of things. And so I think these are huge moments to be able to go into Orlando, who's struggling themselves. That doesn't mean there isn't talent on the field against you. Duncan Maguire's like all over you in the first 20, 25 minutes. They stayed in the game. I like the Tyrese Spicer as like a crashing big wing back slash winger coming off the bench. You're able to use Derek Etienne, so that's now an added piece that you're getting a little bit deeper when healthy. I just thought this was the type of weekend for Toronto that shows the sea change of where they were last year versus this year.
Yeah, and Orlando, for their part, Goss, like they have a lot of problems right now. Maybe one of the biggest is that they don't really have a number 10 that Oscar Pereja feels comfortable with. Last weekend, so not this weekend, but last weekend for Orlando, we saw Nico Ladero in the lineup, which, great, makes sense against Montreal, except Nico Ladero was playing as a winger, and we saw Facundo Torres play inside as the number 10. This weekend, in the loss to Toronto, that was a draw against Montreal, by the way. This weekend, in the loss to Toronto, we see Martin Ojeda playing as the number 10, and he is probably the best option in that spot when you're not going to roll with Ladero, and I can understand not wanting to roll with Ladero game in and game out in the year 2024. He still plays that position more like a second forward than he does like an actual number 10, which leads to these big old gaps in zone 14 for Orlando City. And Duncan Maguire then has to do a lot more roaming than I think he would like to do. I just don't understand really what's going on with the roster build with Orlando. And I have some sympathy for them because I imagine you think Duncan Maguire is going out the door. So you bring in Luis Muriel and you sort of think, okay, he's going to be able to drop in and give us some of the creation and we can get enough on the aggregate from our other guys. It just hasn't worked out that way. And the fact that Oscar Pereja continues to go with Ivan Angulo on the wing when he brings basically no attacking production and hasn't for years in a team that doesn't really need a ton of defensive help. I don't understand what's going on in Orlando. I think their drop off was pretty predictable, and that's exactly where they are.
Joe, what did Orlando do to hurt you?
Let me add to the confusion in this, which is Duncan Maguire being there or not doesn't change any of their roster build.
No, it does, though. It does. Not in terms of having the high leverage spots to use, right? He's not opening a DP spot, which is, I guess, maybe what you're getting at. I should have let you finish, David. My apologies. What I meant was you get Muriel. Like, Muriel played as part of a front two at times in Atalanta. Like, this is a guy who will roam and drop and doesn't really play like a traditional nine. And so you think, okay, we can go out there and have enough versatile attacking players that we don't need to go out and get our, like, you know, pure number 10 string puller type. We don't need that player. We've got enough in what we have.
That team, they have Muriel. Like, if Duncan Maguire wasn't there, they would have the same roster available to them that they have right now.
My point, David, is that the bet that Orlando City made that Luis Muriel would be able to help them solve their chance creation problems hasn't been working. Not least Duncan Maguire is still there and eating up the minutes that you would want to give to Luis Muriel. And the other thing is that Luis Muriel doesn't look particularly good when he's been on the field.
Okay, so that's the main point. My point being, Duncan Maguire's playing because Muriel's been bad and the team's been bad.
Sure.
So I just wanted to point, it's not like, oh, Duncan Maguire's here and we actually thought we were going to bring in a second player with the money we were going to get from him. And that's thrown everything off. It's like, they don't have to play Duncan Maguire, and they are. Because he's the only one scoring goals, and the team is bad right now.
It's just a bad roster, right? Because Orlando are now in this position where they expected Duncan Maguire to go to Blackburn, which, you know, best of luck if that had happened, and he doesn't. and assuming that he was going to go, though, in that whole process, they need a nine. Like, Ramon Enrique didn't work. They need somebody who can go score goals. They go with Muriel. Well, let's face it, they also need a 10. Like, Facundo Torres has been not quite a flop in MLS, but not nearly the player that they wanted him to be. Oscar Perea does not trust Martin Ojeda. He only started, I think, 16 games all of last season as their second most expensive transfer ever. I already did my Angulo thing. Like, it's just not there. It's not in the team. They did a poor job of constructing the top end of this roster, the top end both in terms of the pay scale and in the final third. This team is better than 13th in the East. Obviously, they're better than 13th in the East. I was never sure coming into this year, and I'm still not, that they're going to be in those automatic playoff spots. Like, there are real issues, and I think moving Facundo Torres or Martin Ojeda out the door as soon as that summer transfer window opens would be a real, real boost for this club.
Joe, my very specific prediction for them was that Martin Ojeda will start at least 25 games this season. Are you saying that that's less likely if they're going to ship him out unceremoniously?
I think it's more likely Torres to go than Ojeda, so I think you're probably still okay, but like Oscar Perea's fascination with Ivan Angulo and his like distaste certainly last year for Ojeda is completely bizarre to me. I cannot understand it.
I've said it 1 million times. Ivan Angulo plays like a Colombian Colonial Athletic Association player, and Oscar Perea loves hardworking college soccer players, and he's Colombian. Ivan Angulo is his dream. It's his. It's his entire soul essence in one soccer player.
It makes
you
me
won't
so angry.
Drag Ivan Angulo off the field.
I would eagerly do so.
Can we talk about this, Joe? Like, I'm
also they don't even call it Colonial anymore. I think it's Coastal.
So. That would make more sense.
Gus, don't worry. No one was going to correct you. So no. That's big of you that you did.
No, though. I went to a school that's in the conference. So I had to get it right.
Yeah, that was clear. and Joe and I sort of. Confused head tilt.
For a second, I thought, is that like a Colombian first division club that I don't know about?
I thought it was a very esoteric Colombian soccer joke that I was like, hopefully Joe is on this one. All right, but Joe, this is not meant to be a like gotcha question. You are usually very like level-headed with these things, and your analysis generally pretty unemotional, which I appreciate. Orlando seemed to have annoyed you. And I'm not saying unfairly, I'm not saying you are being unfair to them, but it is rare that we have a situation in which Joe seems to sort of have active frustration with a team.
No.
And I would like to delve deeper into, like, what is it? Is it that they shouldn't have been good last year, but were, and that annoyed you? Is it that people bought into the hype like me, and that annoyed you?
A little bit of both, right? Orlando last year, it hurtful. Just seemed to me like we're playing like a little bit like Cincinnati, and we're seeing a natural drop-off, even though Cincinnati are undergoing a bit more of a roster change. They were just so clearly, like, not as good as their regular season record indicated. So many close games, like a lot of tight grounding out results, relying on Pedro Gallese to be a good goalkeeper, and he's not been this year. Like, they were just never going to be where they were this season, and that's fine. Like, I don't have anything against Orlando City fans. I'm not talking about this club out of spite or anything along those lines. Like, I want them to build a good roster and be competitive because I want to see more teams in MLS go out there and do that stuff. We don't see it enough. But my real point of frustration, Taylor, to be honest, is with folks out there who said they were going to win the Shield. Like, and this is my peers, right? It's not you saying like, oh, I think this team's going to be pretty good in the East. That's a completely reasonable take. It's folks out there like who are talking about them as Shield winners when the Columbus Crew exists, when Inter Miami exists, when Cincinnati, when Atlanta, when the that was one of the most insane periods of time over the offseason when like a group of folks all decided that that was going to happen. And that honestly makes me angry. Yes,
that's fair. And for what it's worth, my preview summary was Orlando City. Things are improved? Things are improved. Things are improved? Because I was not sure. And also with my Martin Ojeda prediction, I did conclude with, I am not sure if Ojeda starting more games makes Orlando City better, because I'm not sure what he does particularly well. So it does seem like maybe that is coming to fruition, even if I don't end up getting that one if they sell him on. But either way, Joe gets a win, I guess, and that's what we should savor from this conversation.
Agreed.
There we are. Joe, since you get that win, should we talk about a team who did not in the form of Seattle?
Oh, man. Can the Seattle Sounders do like one normal thing for like just 90 minutes? Would be great. Guys, they've got 3 red cards in their last 2 games. They're playing David's, I'm being serious right now, I think favorite game of the year tonight in their resumed match against
the Philadelphia
Union.
I was going to say, Joe, they're doing a normal
Union.
Thing. They're starting a game in the 6th minute tonight.
Can we talk about
that? That's like the most normal thing you could do.
Can we talk about that for a moment? Why is that happening?
David, you got it.
Their game against Philly got rained out, but it had already started, so you resumed the game at the 6th minute. You're supposed to resume it on the same lineups. I believe Xavier Arriaga started that
game.
He did. He's been traded.
Yes, he was.
So Yaimar's allowed to step in. I'm curious what would have happened. So Stefan Fry got red carded in the game against DC. He was not playing in that game against Philly. If he was, what happens? Like, does this game go back in order, which means he's allowed to play it before serving his suspension? Or are you suspended?
I think that's what happens. I think he could play this game and is suspended for the next, because I think that's happening with somebody else in this situation. I forget who it is, but there's someone else who's suspended.
Oh, it's Alex Roldan.
Alex Roldan. Yeah. Yeah. He can
who
play
just had
game.
Another game added to his suspension.
It's, this is what I'm saying. Like, it is absolutely insane. I honestly feel for Brian Schmetzer. I feel for this club. They've dealt with so many injuries this year. Their big offseason signing in Pedro de la Vega, which it doesn't feel like Schmetzer ever really had a plan for in terms of how he wanted to use him. Maybe a bit of a heat check from Seattle in terms of that signing. But either way, their big offseason signing, big money signing, comes in, and he's injured his same leg twice. So he injured it once and missed time, and then apparently has re-injured that leg in a different part and is going to miss several more weeks. Like, they've missed basically everybody at different times, and now they're finally getting back healthy, and they're still not having Pedro de la Vega involved, and they're getting back healthy, and they're losing Alex Roldan for two games. They're losing Stephen Fry. They're losing Jackson Reagan. Like, they just cannot get any real momentum over in the Western Conference. I still think, and maybe this is me being crazy, and Goss, I welcome you to say it if this is true. Like, there's still a not insignificant part of me that thinks the Sounders are going to end up, like, fifth in the Western Conference. The quality's there. The Western Conference is bad. I think they're going to be fine, but this malaise has gone on for far, far longer than I think anybody imagined in 2024.
This is Seattle being like, oh, you were adopted to the darkness and I was raised in it. Seattle invented not caring about half the season and then going to MLS Cups. The idea was they were creating something new, I think. Lodero goes out, the team gets younger, they've added pieces, they have depth. I think the idea was that they were going to try and challenge for supporter shields finally. That's something Brian Schmetzer really hasn't ever done. That is now out the window. They're fine. Like, I hate to say it that way because I hate to be like Joe where it's like the regular season doesn't matter. And
don't blame me, guys. Blame the system, baby.
Everyone's going to make the playoffs and all that stuff. But like, if there's ever a team you're going to trust now, I think one of the things we learned last year and the last few years is like, if they are playing bad at the end of the season, that's believable. Don't go into the playoffs and say, oh, well, now they're going to flip the switch. But they have plenty of time from now until then to get there. And I would add on the De La Vega thing is like, they have a spot for him on the team. Because I think Seattle now has to build a roster with the assumption someone is always hurt, which means Christian Roldan's always playing a different position. So then Morris is always playing a different position. If they have all of that movement, there's always a spot for De La Vega if he's healthy. And the idea was he was just going to be a massive upgrade as an individual over Chu, and that was going to be enough. Taylor, are you stoked about DC? Are we getting...
That's what I was about to say. Counterpoint, you all are talking a lot about Seattle's issues. I feel like the obvious point here would be that maybe DC United is going to win MLS Cup. We can all agree on that, right?
No, DC sucks. I just want to give thoughts and prayers to Christian Benteke because LeBron James was eliminated last night. He went with a double LeBron celebration on his first goal on the weekend. He did the hand thing and then he ran to the sideline. He got chalk powder and threw it in the air on the same week that LeBron got eliminated. So I just want to say, I love Christian Benteke as a player and a person, and I feel for you.
We found a bar in New York once that would let us do the LeBron shot, which I forget what it was, like a shooter you would do, and then you would throw salt in the air afterwards, and they just let us do it. So we did that for a while until they realized
Did you ask them about that, or did they have that on offer? Okay, so that was a Taylor Rockwell requested experience.
It was the person I was drinking with was the one to introduce me to it, and then the four of us did it several times because we were in our mid-20s, and we were obnoxious, as is the rule.
So you stayed after to clean up the salt?
I think
you brought your own vacuum?
I actually think we did in the end. I think we felt so bad about it.
Nice.
Yeah. It was a smaller bar. They kind of just let us have free reign, apparently, for reasons. Joe, Goss said earlier that he hates to say it that way. I forget what he was regarding, but I did want my one follow-up question to be, based on your facial expressions, what upset you more, when he referred to Toronto's head coach as Johnny Herdman or when he then referred to the rest of the team as the lads? Both of them seem to cause you physical pain. I'm just wondering which one upset you more.
The second one, the lads, cool. I think is worse. I don't know John Herdman personally. I would not choose to call him Johnny, but if that's the route Goss wants to go.
Sounds like you guys aren't mates.
I will not go down the lads route.
That's outstanding work, David. Gus, I don't know if you heard our Chicago Fire Big Thing episode from last week, in which we, I think, somehow made Chicago Fire fans happy that we were discussing it and then also depressed at the same time. Did you have anything to add on the Fire? Any wishes, well wishes you would like to extend to their fan base? Anything at all?
I mean, I've been a Knicks, Mets, and Jets fan my whole life, so, like, I get it.
Way to make it
at least
you,
they won things. Yeah. I guess just feel fortunate that you have a rich owner who at least will spend money, even if it's poorly, and we go on from there.
Yeah.
I don't have anything to add. I don't have,
Chris,
like,
Brady was great. Chris Brady was great against Atlanta.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of hope for them, except for the fact that, like, it's not that hard. Look at Cincinnati. Look at Houston. Look at St. Louis. It's not that hard. And that's one of the things that gets really tough, especially for a team that spends a bunch of money, is like, it's kind of right there for you and it's all in front of you. It seems like there's more spending options added, right? Another buyout. That's like a home run for the Chicago Fire. They can make a whole nother mistake on a player, buy them out and do it again. So that's like big for them. They could add more DP or U22s so they don't have to spend it on Jairo Torres. So all of that's a positive for them.
Gus, I am not a big NBA guy, obviously. I did see the headline about Knicks fans taking over in
Greatest
Philadelphia.
Team in the world?
Can you explain what happened there?
Yeah, I think the Knicks fans are the biggest fan base in every city in the Eastern Conference, including New York. So everywhere we go, we chant MVP for Jalen Brunson and we dominate. So yeah, basically everyone at the Philly game was like 50-50 Knicks and Sixers fans, and then the Knicks won, and they put a Knicks jersey on the statue of Wilt Chamberlain outside, and like, we're chanting, let's go Knicks, and Joel Embiid. It was part of a long list of things he cried about, and then the Knicks went up 3-1.
And Joe, for your part, the Suns, did they get swept yet?
All right, I think this is good. I think good chat about Major League Soccer, guys, and nothing else. I think this is a really good show.
All right. Well, congratulations to the Suns. Look forward to seeing them in the next round. That's totally a thing that's going to happen. Joe Lowry, thank you for all your contributions today, my friend.
You just had to look up the playoff schedule to do me dirty like that, Taylor. This was fun, Taylor. Thank you, as always.
You are correct. It was my pleasure. David Goss, I hope it was your pleasure as well.
I look forward to going to Chicago and hanging out with Fire fans.
Yeah.
Now.
We'll drink some Malort, and then we'll regret drinking Malort. Listeners, thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it, as always, and we will talk to you again tomorrow.
Everyone, it's Meg Linehan here. If women's soccer is your calling, I'm excited to say my podcast, Full Time, is back on May 23rd. Join myself and my new amazing co-host, Tamara Griffin, every Thursday as we take a deep dive into the biggest stories in the women's game, from the NWSL to the Olympics. We'll bring you in-depth reporting that only The Athletic can provide, chat to leaders within the industry, and chart the next phase of the U.S. Women's National Team as they look to rebuild. Just search for Full Time wherever you get your podcasts and follow and subscribe so you never miss an episode.